Sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider he has thrown into the sea. Our text today, Exodus 13 to 15, takes us through the deliverance of the people from Egypt through the Red Sea, and ends with poetry in the context of that deliverance. Welcome to The Good Word. We continue our series on the book of Exodus. I'm your host, Chiagua Heiss, and I am joined by my conversation partners, Dr. Matilda Fry and Dr. Jody Washburn. Friends, iconic moments here for those who watch the Hollywood movies of Moses parting the waters. And there's also tricky depictions. There's two depictions of how the parting of the waters happened. Maybe we can talk about that too, even though that's not in my study guide. It's an interesting conversation there. But for us today, how does the Song of Moses function as a theological and even political declaration? How does poetry serve to affirm collective identity and memory? And what does Miriam's leadership in song teach us about the role of a prophet, Prophet Miriam here, the role of women in Israel's history, which we've discussed in this lesson thus far, and how can we reclaim and honor the prophetic voices of women in our own faith communities today? So there you have. I served several questions. Jody, I will start with you on this lesson. What are you thinking?
Well, there are a couple of things. I want to go back to something to follow up on the Passover ritual question. And then, yeah, I do want to speak to Miriam and her leadership in song. So you ask in the guide, you know, what do we learn from Miriam leading, right? Miriam is leading this triumphant song of victory, you could say, that involved dancing and drumming, perhaps with tambourines. And I think it's important here to just point out a couple of things. One is that in the study of Hebrew language, specifically studies that look at the development of the language over time, we can see that what we have here is one example of some of the very earliest Hebrew language. And I finished recently sitting for a week and listening to indigenous wisdom teachers from around the world that had been gathered for a conference around the release of the film, The Eternal Song. And one of the things that stood out to me was in all different geographical places in the world, these indigenous wisdom teachers were pointing out that there's a long legacy of women being the person who cares for and carries along, blanking on the word, but the spiritual wisdom, the healing technologies, these elements of a cultural system. And so I really think that we see here this calling out to the role of women as composing, leading, and then carrying forward these really important poems, songs, practices. And it's easy for us to get all tied up, you know, maybe Moses wrote the poem and Miriam is just quoting the first few lines, or, you know, there's all these discussions. And I just...
Rabbis discuss that. Who's singing what and how,
Fine. We can go there, but I think what I'm interested in is just what we see in the language, that this is carrying on a tradition that's very early, predating the written text that surrounds it, the narrative framing. I think it's a shout out within the Hebrew Bible to that legacy
of ancient wisdom in drawing from these things.
Yeah.
Interesting. You were going to say something about Passover, or did you skip it? Because I said, I heard you saying, I'm going to say something on Passover and on Miriam. So I want to make sure I'm hearing you.
You have a question here in the study guide. What role does embodied ritual play in helping future generations internalize liberation? How do our bodies remember what our minds sometimes forget? You know, we were talking about what felt like really, really painful and big things, you know. And the image, when I think of Passover, it feels a bit mundane, but I do want to bring it up.
Okay.
I think one of the roles of ritual is to give us these embodied experiences that land in us in a way that words can, but words often don't land so deep, or they don't necessarily automatically land in that deep way. And a few years back, the local immigrant rights coalition partnered with folks from the local synagogue and put on a couple of what we called immigrant rights awareness, basically like Seder, Passover Seder. So we use the order, so the word Seder, which is the sort of way that you structure, in a structured way, celebrate the Passover to remember what God did for the people when God brought them out of Egypt. The word essentially just means order. Okay, so within that structure, there are all kinds of activities and you eat certain food and there's all different tastes and lack of taste and all different textures and all of this. And it's in a way sitting with those ritual practices that can kind of shed light on what you were saying in an earlier episode about how we have this refrain throughout the Bible that always says, okay, pay attention wherever you are to how you are engaging with the migrant among you because you were once, right? So one of the things that stands out to me the most every time I participate in a Passover Seder, there is a series of questions, for instance, that are given to children. So the children have specific roles in this ordered framework. And then the other piece that stands out is that you leave a door open for Elijah. You know, I'm thinking of a child where a lot of the symbols and the theological implications and all of this, it may or may not register, right? But when you're sitting in a room and you leave a door open to symbolize that you never know when God's presence, God's prophetic voice is going to enter, right? You want to be ready to receive that.
The hope that Elijah would come and
Yes. And I understand this is all layered, right? This is layers of rituals beyond the actual Exodus event per se. But yeah, I just think that there's a lot of power in even quite simple and mundane ritual activities.
Yeah.
Like imagining a child who may not know what it means to hear an adult say, oh, the God we serve is a God who dares to be present within the human journey, right? So we look for that God and we look for that God's presence. That might feel really abstract, but if you've sat year after year.
Repeating
the same ritual and being told every year, we leave this door open because we expect the entrance.
It changes. It changes our perception.
We carry those experiences and stories in our bodies.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, that's literally the question that we have there. So Miriam, as this prophet, poet, and again, thank you for taking us back to Passover and an embodied ritual that keeps on appearing in the text of Exodus. All of these important festivals and things that the people need to remember so that their presence in the world might not be lived with a disregard for what has happened to them. That's why zakar becomes such an important word in the Hebrew language. It's remember what has happened through embodied ritual. Matilda, what are you thinking in that corner there?
Actually, the words that you mentioned last, zakar, is here. It will come up again in the Sabbath commandment in Exodus 20.
Yep.
But here in chapter 13, it's mentioned first in the very same way. For about the Passover. This is a day to remember.
Yep.
And this is a day to celebrate as well. And so the children are asking the questions. And I love that element of the Pesach, of the Passover festival. The children ask the question, why is this? What happened? And so on. And so this part here connects us to the book of Deuteronomy, definitely, where most probably this is an insertion that is so into this passage here about the celebration of the Memorial Day based on Deuteronomy's passage, because there is plenty of language that connects these two parts in the Torah in this case. The other thing that I wanted to mention is the word for fear. As soon as the Egyptians come with their armies and come closer and closer, the people, the Israelite people, already start to question, why did you do this to us? Are there not enough graves in Egypt? Let us serve the Egyptians. It is so deeply emotional, the passage, the way it is, uses the language there, that you cannot overlook that. From the, yes, we get out, but the very act of leaving the place where you are heavily oppressed is a fearful experience. It's definitely not the same kind of experience, but for me personally, I remember the time when I left the country that was a country that was unfree. People were not free to come and go. And I remember the time when I and my family left, and I was sitting on that place in the train. And I would not get up because I felt it in my body, and I still remember that. I could not get up even to, like, go to the bathroom. And this was through the entire night until I knew that we were out.
In a different place.
Like you're holding your breath.
Yes.
Like, it makes me think of how we started this conversation today, Mathilde and Jody, in the sense of what if these embodied rituals that God establishes are ways for us to cope with those very things that our body is already carrying in a way. Mm-hmm. So the feeling that you're describing, Mathilde, is very interesting. Regardless of how you reason through it, regardless of the logic of it all, your body is already carrying an entire theology, if you will, of trauma, of violence, of the lack of freedom. Mm-hmm. How do you undo something like that? It's almost as if the answer of Exodus is, well, these are these rituals that I want you to do so that your body can also make room for these other aspects of what life can be like, will be like, so that as you gesture, as you perceive the world, it doesn't have to be tied to that one event of the past, but to these other things that I've been doing.
I'm not very sure if we are able as human beings to fully leave it in the past, in our humanness. And even the place in Deuteronomy when it is asked that you should remember, you should understand that you were a slave in Egypt, that brings it back into the following generations.
Yeah.
So the children are supposed to understand something that even though when they were not there, they still should be able to relive that experience.
They're part of it,
because that has to stay with us.
No, for sure. The event remains in the past, but the body has absorbed all of these things, for better or worse. But I think, again, the ethical standpoint of the negative experience is tied to the text that repeats itself. Remember that you were this in the past. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to draw something from it. So we can't overcome it and just move away from it. God uses even that pain to draw an ethical standpoint.
And
how we
and the word for fear in the Hebrew is the same word for reverence and awe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so out of fear, awe results.
Yeah.
Out of fear comes the song, Moses, Miriam, at the end. So that experience is tied together.
Interesting. Oh, my goodness. I wish we had more time to discuss more fear. But before we go, just a note on Miriam, because that's sort of where chapter 15 ends. There's a beautiful verse here. After she sings, there's the whole situation of the bitterness of the waters, and then a verse that says there toward the end, I will put none of the diseases on you that I put on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord, your healer. I love that description of God. And I just didn't want to end our program without mentioning that this God is a God of healing from our past experiences, using those experiences to lead us into a fuller, embodied self in the world today. Thanks go to my conversation partners, Mathilde and Jody, our program engineer, Corin Bailey, to all of you for listening in for the good word. I'm Thiago Ahais.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.